Senate Committee on Rules of Elections, Tuesday, May 11, 1999, 4:30 p.m., hearing room D, Chair Senator Charles Dunn.
Committee on Rules and Elections, and going to open a work session on Senate Bill 867. We have Lynn.
Yes, Rossick.
Rossick and Bill Sizemore. Got, yes, come on up, and we have some new amendments to 867, and these are amendments that Mr. Sizemore has brought to us. You want to explain your amendments, and then we'll hear from
Yes, Chairman Sparkman, the record. My name is Bill Sizemore, Oregon Taxpayers United. The purpose of the Dash 2, Dash 1 and 2 amendments to this bill is we took out parts of 867 and as originally drafted that there were objections from the Secretary of State and others saying we don't want this to apply to measures for the 2000 election or before, so we don't end up in a situation where we have two different kinds of ballot titles on the same ballot. So we eliminate it so it doesn't apply to anything until after the year 2000. So it will not apply to the general election coming up. Also, we took out the language that would have required that the summary be printed on the ballot in every county. Currently, about half the counties, primarily due to their voting machines, do not print the summary on the ballot. They put both the summary and the financial impact statement. They post it in the polling place when you go in and vote. And some said they simply have to buy new voting machines. That was originally the problem. With vote by mail, we don't have the difficulty in communicating all of the ballot title to the voter because they can get it in the mail. But it should not necessarily have to be printed on their ballot because the ballot, when it goes to the voting machine, if it was had that language printed on, it wouldn't work in the voting machine. So we removed that language and that objection to the bill. We also took out the language which was the most controversial, which said that if you filed a measure that was 250 words or less, you didn't have to have a ballot title. You just print your ballot, your measure right on the ballot. It's short. Let people read it and decide whether to vote yes or no. And we took that language out. We think it's a good idea. We also think it's a bad idea, depending on who writes the measure. So this the purpose of this bill was to make it so that ballot titles serve the public, whether regardless of your philosophical bent or whatever, that when it's all said and done, you have a pretty clear explanation of what a measure does, what happens if you vote yes, what happens if you vote no. And I hope and believe that this was written so that it doesn't favor any side of the political argument, neither the sponsors nor the opponents of a measure. The area of controversy that Lynn Rossick and I have been discussing out in the hallway is there's a provision in the bill that does not, in the amendment, both in the Dash 1 and the Dash 2, it's expanded on a bit in the Dash 2, that limits the kind of language that the Attorney General can write in the explanation of a no vote. And the reason for that is goes back to the original reason for having this kind of legislation that was passed in the 95 session, was to so when a voter knows what they believe on an issue, they know whether to vote yes or no. That was the whole reason for it. But one of the problems that has developed in implementation of this language is that the Attorney General sometimes describes what happens if you vote no, describes existing law in some way that's not really affected by the passage of the measure. And so the voter is really given a choice of, I'll give you an example. A particular measure that said a yes vote requires government to pay landowners if the federal regulation reduces the value of the property. Now, under existing constitutional law, Article 1, Section 18, the government has to pay a landowner just compensation if their property is taken for public use. That's in the Constitution now. This measure would have said they not only have to pay if they take it, but also if they pass a regulation that reduces the value of your property. They take a buildable lot and make it non-buildable anymore, and it loses 80% of its value. But when the AG wrote the ballot title and certified it for the measure, he said a yes vote requires government to pay a landowner if government regulation reduces the value of the property, but a no vote retains existing constitutional provisions requiring just compensation if private property is taken for public use. Well, now you're reading that as a voter sitting at home, and you're going to say, okay, I vote yes, and I get compensation to the landowner if government reduces the value of the property. If I vote no, I keep the provision that says they got to pay if they take your property for public use. Well, gee, a lot of people will say, I like both of those. I want to have the government pay if they reduce the person's property value. I want to have government pay if they take your property for public use. But in reality, if you voted yes, that provision in the Constitution, which requires just compensation for taking private property for public use, stays. It is retained whether you vote yes or vote no. So we wrote, or LC at our request, wrote language that says you can't put something in the no vote about existing law if it won't be changed if you vote yes. And that would keep the spirit of this yes-no vote idea that when you're done reading it, you say, I believe this, I'm going to vote yes. You believe this, I'm going to vote no. And if they don't create that contrast, this system does not work. We are misleading voters by giving them two choices that are not really two choices. They would not get rid of the just compensation for taking property for public use if they voted no. But they could infer that very easily or logically by that certified ballot time. So that's the main area of controversy. And of course, I don't mean to speak for Lynn regarding that because she's quite capable of doing that on her own. But I think that sums up basically what's in the -1 and -2 amendments.
Thank you, Lynn.
Chair Starr, members of the committee, my name is Lynn Rossick, and I'm an assistant attorney general. I'm here speaking on behalf of Attorney General Myers, who couldn't be here today. We received both the -1s and the -2s today, so we've had a fairly short amount of time to try to assimilate the changes. I can say that to the extent that the -1s remove the controversial pieces that Mr. Sizemore was speaking of, that we certainly agree with those. We also agree that the transition language is now appropriate to wait through the 2000 election and start anew with the next election. And the other portion that I can be positive about is that, as we have, I think if you'll recall, Attorney General Myers and I spoke at the public hearing on this bill, and that we were supportive of the amendment to ORS 250-035, which would increase the word limit for state ballot titles for state measures. Because as we pointed out, they're much more restrictive than those for local measures, and particularly for some of the complex state measures, it's very difficult to make do with 85 words. So we are supportive of that. I don't think we have a strong position whether the yes-no is at 25 or 30, as is proposed from the -1 to the -2. Now I want to speak to the issues at which I guess we part company. I think that our testimony at the last hearing, which we still feel fairly strongly about, is that we ask that the statute which addresses how ballot titles are drafted not contain that language dictating particular types of words that need to be in the measure, in particular the articles and conjunctions. And I know that Mr. Sizemore feels strongly that because of the word limits, we have truncated our description so that there aren't articles and conjunctions that makes it more difficult to read. And we justify that by saying, well, we have so few words, we've got to give you content. We have to give you real words that tell you something about this measure. And Mr. Sizemore has attempted to address that by giving us more words so that we will have words to use articles and conjunctions. And I mean, to the extent that we can logically do that, we would like to, but we are still concerned that it would be some measures where we would be constrained in being able to explain the measure in a way that we think is logical by the dictate that we use articles and conjunctions, when in fact an article or conjunction may not be the best way to handle the understandable, the clarity of that sentence or that measure. I guess I can assert that we will certainly attempt to follow what is already in the statute about making all of our statements simple and understandable, but that we would prefer that the statute not say that. Another reason is it's just another source of litigation, and that it will be another matter that the Supreme Court, which already has a lot of ballot titles, is going to be another standard for them that will increase costs for all of the parties in litigation. The other issue involves the point that Mr. Sizemore just made about the no statement and his objection to some of the ballot titles, one which he described, which he didn't think was accurate or understandable for people. Our concern, at the last hearing, we offered to meet with Mr. Sizemore to try to come to some language that we could agree to. And I know Mr. Attorney General Myers sent Mr. Sizemore a letter, which we didn't hear back from him, and so we did not have an opportunity to negotiate some language. And so at this point, as I said to him earlier, we can't agree to this language because we don't think, for one thing, that it accomplishes what he's trying to accomplish. We also don't think that it's going to serve the public in that what the people want to know on the no vote, I believe, is what will happen if they vote no? What is the status quo? I mean, because if they vote yes, they're going to get some kind of change, which is described in the yes vote. If they vote no, in most cases, it's not a void. There's something out there that they're still going to have, and that's what we're trying to describe, which I think we're being told by this new language that we could not do. And I think that although we still remain very willing to work with Mr. Sizemore on the language, that we can't agree to the language that is currently proposed, both the language that was already in the bill and the new sentence on the dash 2. And so we would ask that if the bill is going to pass out of committee, that language be deleted.
Specifically, sub 2 of Section 3, is that what you're talking to?
I'm sorry. Are you looking at the dash 1?
I'm looking at dash 1.
Okay. Now, the dash 1s don't address this at all. The original language in the bill, Senate Bill 867, on page 1, the language that we're objecting to and asking to remove is on lines 20 through 22, and 25 to 29, and also lines 3 through 5 in the dash 2.
If I may, Senator Starch, I'm sorry. As this discussion has gone on, by the way, my secretary didn't call and try to make an appointment, and it didn't happen schedule-wise. But we have maybe impasse here in that when we wrote the original version of this with Senator Miller in 1995 session, Senate Bill 926, we thought we covered this problem by saying that those two statements, yes and no, had to be simple and understandable. Well, it's turned out with time that it's been clear that simple and understandable to a lawyer is not necessarily simple and understandable to an everyday person. That's to be expected. And so what we are trying to do is make ballot titles not contain the maximum amount of information you can pack into it by eliminating all the parts of speech, the does and the ands, and replacing all the ands with commas. We're trying to avoid putting so much information in that you feel an ordinary person doesn't understand it. So I've taken numerous ballot titles that were written under the 15-word limit and said, how many words do I need to make this so you can say the same exact thing but understandable? And it works out that 4 to 6 words makes you say the same thing understandably. So by making the total word allowed to go from 15 to 25, you allow them to state, use the articles and conjunctions you need, so you have flowing conversational type language, and still have 4 to 6 words to add additional information. But if you do not put that language in there, they will do, and they actually said this in 95, and Lindsay, correct me if I'm wrong, that if they have more words, they will try to include more information. And I got a letter from the AG's office on another ballot title where they were critical. In fact, they said they were offended by my suggesting that they try to pack less information in to make sure that what they say so that it's understandable. And, of course, I didn't mean that to be offensive. I meant for them to say everything they can say as long as they can say it so that you can understand it. And that's, to me, this is not a mess. It's not philosophical. All we want to do is make ballot to give you enough words, give the Attorney General enough words to say it clearly and as understandably as possible. And if they have enough words to put more information and say that so it's understandable, great. We're willing to do that. The more information, the better, as long as it's expressed so you can understand it. But for their office, more words means jamming more in. And not regard with, and I think without regard to whether that's understandable by an everyday person. So if you give more words and don't say that they have to use the parts of speech you'd use in conversational language, we'll just have ballot titles that are more confusing than they are today. And that's not the purpose of this bill. I'd rather this bill just die than end up with ballot titles that are longer and more confusing rather than longer and more understandable, more comprehensive and more understandable.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chair, just thinking, I'm not sure how you tell them that's only to keep it simple.
Okay. Well, what happened to my other member? If there's no further questions, would be my intention to move this bill today. And if there's further work to be done, perhaps we'll have an opportunity on the outside. We're running out of time, and we will not have opportunity to work it here and still.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Did Mr. Sizemore know that the Coalition for Initiative Rights proposed the bill? Are you aware of that?
No. Senator, Chairman Starr, Senator Brown, no. Though that has not been of real significance, their support or opposition in the past on other bills. They're fairly ad hoc in who they are, and it isn't, I consider them friends and foes, depending on the issue.
I think that, we're done. Find that which we was faxed in today. Testimony from Daniel Meek. The
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
We did not take any testimony from the Coalition for Initiative Rights at our last hearing.
They were not. Oh, this is a testifying.
Right. This is a testimony we have.
Thank you. Their objection is primarily close to the unamended bill and the 250 words. Mm-hmm. And I would entertain a motion since we're in a work session.
Mr. Chairman, I would
bring up is on that. Have we amended the bill?
We need to amend M.
One and two, or?
One and two.
I would move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 867.
Senator Miller has moved the dash two amendments. Are there objections to this?
You would object?
You would object? Let's,
just register me. And we'll in opposition, you don't have to call the roll.
We'll, register, Senator Barr in opposition to the dash two.
And move the, Mr. Chairman, move dash one amendment to Senate Bill 867.
Senator Miller has moved the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 867. Same of opposition. Senator Barr is opposed. Show that both amendments passed. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I move Senate Bill 867 as amended to the floor. Are they do pass recommendation?
Senator Miller has moved Senate Bill 867 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Bryan.
Aye.
Senator Bryan.
No.
Senator Miller.
Aye.
Senator
Starr. Aye. Having received the necessary majority, Senate Bill 867 has moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I will carry.
I'm going to lift.
Okay. Let's do that.
Mr. Chair, on the last bill, I would encourage the Ms. Rossig and Ms. Sycor to get together and have that discussion because it'll help things on the House side and I'm sure with the governor's office
as well. Yeah, very much, very important. I appreciate it. Appreciate the advice. Thank you. We will open a work session on executive appointments. And we have a number of reappointments today. We have no one here to testify on those, and I'll just let that.
You know how to make that motion.
Would you like to move it on bond?
We can move the, I think,
is there any reason to move on this individually?
Huh?
I might just read them into the record. And,
okay. That would be good.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we recommend confirmation of the appointments of John Boyce, Ken Jernsted, Leonard Kokel, and Philip Sockstad to the Commission for the Blind, Grace Williams to the Long-Term Care Advisory Committee, Amy Cuddy to the Oregon Tourism Council, and David Zilke to the Oregon Tourism Council, and Judy Bauman to the State Plumbing Board, and Carlson to the State Plumbing Board, and Stephen Woods to the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots. And I would move that motion be made on block.
Senator Miller has moved the appointments. The 10 appointments we have on today's calendar, he has recommended the record. I will not repeat those, but he's moved that we approve the referral of those for approval for the Senate en bloc. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Having received the majority vote of the committee, those appointments are moved to the full Senate with recommendation that the appointments be confirmed. And
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I know I was one of the first people to try these all in Blonde, on the Senate floor. I just want to let the chair know that some of my members expressed concern about the informality, so just wanted to raise that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
On that point, what I would invite the distinguished minority leader to do, perhaps, is to give her caucus advance notice of this list, and if any one of them, it was desired by a member of that caucus to single out, that would, I can't imagine we would oppose that.
I think the issue, Mr. Chair and Senator Mello, with all due respect, was the fact that there wasn't anything said about each individual appointee, and that it lessened the formality and the important role that each member played.
Thank you. That's very much. Well, it's well taken. I appreciate it. And do we have a carrier?
I'm happy to have you. I will say something about everyone.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And nice session.
Senator Brown will carry and we'll say something about each one.
Mr. Chair, and also, if there's no objection, would like to be recorded as a no vote on Senate Bill 867. As usual, it does not change the outcome. I don't believe there'd be any objection.
Without objection, so heard.
Thank you.
That hurts our feelings. Yes. we're going to open a public hearing and on STR 15. STR 15. And we didn't get anybody.
That's me.
It's your baby.
I've got to change directions here. I was down on
there. There you go. Let me go down below.
You can do your thing.
I will. I am going down. I want to see how you go. All right.
Some of us look better from the front than we do on the side.
You
gotta
get the tape on the bill you carry the way today.
I'm like, help! Check out some of your gestures in a critical moment.
The duel. Mr. Chairman, and members, it's a pleasure to be before you today. For the record, Senator Randy Miller, District 13. Senate Joint Resolution 15 is the amendment that calls for regular annual sessions of the Legislative Assembly, and as I think we discussed previously, it would restrict the time that we could meet so that, in fact, we would be in session fewer days than we've been averaging over the past decade. The bill as amended and is the product of the thoughts of this committee, and I hope reflects our thinking, says that the odd-numbered year session would not exceed 120 days. The even-numbered year session would not exceed, in my view here, is 50 days, and you'll have a choice in amendments, 50 or 60. I can tell you, Mr. Chairman, the members, that the thinking on the 50 days really reflects the difficulties placed on many of our members who travel from some distance to Salem, and I'm trying to accommodate, frankly, their apartment rental situations. If we extend at all, that would probably bump them up against whether if they had 2 month-to-month rentals, and indeed, if we begin as we would in February, that being a short month, you're already losing about 3 days on your month-to-month rent. So that's, somebody wants to look back in history if this should pass and see why it's 50 rather than 60, or at least if that passes, that's, I'm trying to accommodate those who commute or have to move here. The other issue before you, Mr. Chairman and members, is one that Senator Brown expressed a concern with, and that is the bill as originally crafted said at the end of the sessions that per diem would no longer be paid a suggestion was made, well, perhaps to accommodate those for whom this is a real hardship, pay could be extended through the first 5-day extension in the event there was an extension, but not in the second extension. So I just submit that for your... Odd-numbered year session would not exceed 120 days. The even-numbered year session would not exceed, in my view here, is 50 days, and you'll have a choice in amendments, 50 or 60. I can tell you, Mr. Chairman and members, that the thinking on the 50 days really reflects the difficulties placed on many of our members who travel from some distance to Salem, and I'm trying to accommodate, frankly, their apartment rental situations. If we extend at all, that would probably bump them up against whether if they had 2 month-to-month rentals, and indeed, if we begin as we would in February, that being a short month, you're already losing about 3 days on your month-to-month rent. So that's, you know, somebody wants to look back in history if this should pass and see why it's 50 rather than 60, or at least if that passes. That's, I'm trying to accommodate those who commute from a, or have to move here. The other issue before you, Mr. Chairman and members, is one that Senator Brown expressed concern with, and that is the bill as originally crafted said at the end of the sessions the per diem would no longer be paid. A suggestion was made, well, perhaps to accommodate those for whom this is a real hardship, pay could be extended through the first 5-day extension in the event there was an extension, but not in the second extension. So I just submit that for your approval, and hope you will, and I think it would be beneficial for the state of Oregon.
Senator Brown.
I move that actual minutes.
Senator Brown has moved, well, wait a minute, we're in a public hearing mode. There's no questions. We will close the public hearing. Ms. Dennis?
Yes, for 50 days.
And open the work session. Yeah. Thank you, Senator Miller. You can come back and join us for this vote, and appreciate Senator Brown. You,
I move the dash 4 minutes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Brown has moved the dash 4 minutes to SCR 15. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Chairman, I move Joint Resolution 15 to the floor to do pass as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Miller has moved SGR 15 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Not, clerk will call the roll.
Senator Brown?
Aye.
Senator Byer?
Aye.
Senator Miller?
Aye.
Senator Scott?
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, SGR 15 has moved to the floor of the new pass. Senator Miller will
close at the end of the session.
Very always pass it near the end.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to open a work session on SGR 3. And all about the amendments, Mr. Administrator. We have any witnesses?
No, we didn't.
The top of tier.
Okay.
Yes, we do have someone who can help answer questions if there are any. Would you explain that?
SCR 3, the amendment to SCR 3 is the result of a study group that met several times that included yourself and several representatives, members of the representatives of the Attorney General's Office, the Supreme Court, and various chief commissioners. The one change that is in the consent resolution as amended with the -1 amendments would give the elections division an additional 15 days to verify initiative signatures. To verify initiative signatures. This could be accomplished without reducing the time provided for gathering signatures, as was originally stated in Senate Joint Resolution 3. There is a companion House bill that will shift the responsibility for the explanatory and financial impact statements from the Elections Division to the Legislative Administration Committee. And that is how we can accomplish giving the Elections Division an additional 15 days to verify signatures without changing the time of when the petitions must be turned into the Elections Division. This additional 15 days will give the Elections Division time to respond to unforeseen situations that may arise when they are verifying signatures. And so, as amended, with the dash ones, SCR 3 would read on page 1, line 22, that an initiative petition shall be filed not less than 4 months before the election, and so that would just retain current law. The one change would be made on page 2 on line 10, where they would have the additional 15 days.
Any questions? Any comments?
Are we in work session?
We are in work session.
I would move the -1 amendments, SJR 3.
Senator Bryan, let's move the -1 amendments to SJR 3. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Chair, I move SJR 3 as amended to the... Does this go to Ways and Means or to the floor?
What's we got for fiscal on this?
Let's see.
Do we have...
This would...
Referral?
No, we do not have a subsequent referral, Mr. Chair, and the fiscal impact would be the standard for an additional measure for the ballot, the voter's pamphlet, and then... They also state that the fiscal impact on the Secretary of State and local elections officials is indeterminate. Increasing the amount of time allowed for processing initiative and referendum petitions could decrease the need for additional staff resources to review and verify signatures. However, effects of future court decisions regarding sufficiency of petition signatures are unknown at this time.
What are we doing?
Well, Mr. Chair, and it looks like we're slightly over the $50,000 mark, and it could save money, too, but I guess the rule was it's got to go down the Ways and Means. So I'll amend my motion rather than to the floor to the two-path recommendation to send it to Ways and Means.
Senator Bryant amended his motion to send the SCR 3 to Ways and Means. Any objections? Well, let's have the clerk call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. I received the necessary majority. SCR 3 has moved to Ways and Means with a due pass. And with that, I think we've conducted our business, and we take your... We did, and we have... Do you want to vote on the...
Yes, could I... Since you recorded it...
Without objection, Senator Miller, or Senator Bryan,
yes,
wants to be recorded as an aye vote.
Here we go again.
I don't have to tell you, because I'd be a better senator if we did it annually.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah. It would organization work well. We adjourn the Committee on Rules and Elections. Hugh Kepley.